The president put together a commission early last year after the issues in Ferguson and Baltimore, and really it was to look at policing and communities and how to improve things. It's been one of those hot button issues over the last couple of years, so he wanted to do something about it. So the commission was put together with members of the different national organizations representing both law enforcement and community organizations, including Black Lives Matters. And they came out with a report, a task force report, and that came out in May of 2015. And in that report, it came out with six pillars of areas of focus and then some recommendations.
Why do you think they invited the chief of a college campus police force?
Well, you know, I have said for a long time that some of these issues have been addressed in higher ed law enforcement for many years. Higher ed law enforcement kind of came from the distrust with local law enforcement on college campuses, particularly during the turbulent 60s and 70s. And so that's kind of how we were formed. So some of these areas that are a focus for this report, the six pillars, have been in areas of focus for higher ed law enforcement since its existence. So maybe for us, it's something that, you know, the Department of Justice and the president's office has looked at. Well, higher ed law enforcement may already be doing some of the different things that may be beneficial for other law enforcement agencies to learn from.
What are some of the major findings of this presidential report? What are some of the six pillars that they talked about of community policing, good community policing?
The first pillar is building trust and legitimacy. So looking at the different ways that law enforcement can work with the community and vice versa, the community can work with law enforcement. The second is policy and oversight. There's over 18,000 police departments in the United States, and each one is under local control. So there's not a federal oversight over all these law enforcement agencies. So each one can have individual policies. Now, law enforcement's come a long way in the last 30, 40 years in terms of policies, but there are still some things that in law enforcement we can do to try and whether it's looking at more life preservation policies when it comes to use of force or just policies in regards to pursuits, some of the high-risk areas that law enforcement does that maybe this task force can take a look at it, if providing a little bit more support for those agencies that don't already have solid policies in place. The third area is technology and social media. We know that social media is kind of the thing that's started in the last 10 years. It's really taken off and is impacting some of these issues that we're seeing, whether people are live reporting incidents that are occurring or interactions with police, but also some of the positive interactions that are taking place out there. You know, we do a number of different things locally here on our social media. We post things that try to be funny and attention-getting, but also informative to our community.
Are they encouraging more social media on the part of the police departments to communicate with the community? We know the effect social media has had in recording incidents mm-hmm. that are troubling to the minority community.
Yeah, this is their focus on social media is what ways can we engage our communities better and get feedback from them as well, ways of opening up those lines of communication. So they're looking at it from that aspect, not so much as a reporting of police misconduct or things like that. Not that those things aren't happening. Those things happen naturally, but more of a way for police to get more engaged with the community.
What else? What were some of the other suggestions, recommendations?
Community policing and crime reduction was one of the other pillars. Community policing is something that's been around for many years. And when you think of the 1950s and the you know, Mayberry and that kind of concept of the police officers getting to know their communities, being from the communities and interacting with people from the community, that's really what community policing is about, rather than the isolation of being in a patrol car and not interacting, rather than being more proactive than responsive. And then also looking for solutions with the community for problem-solving issues. So if there is an issue with a particular lights being out in this neighborhood and it making the residents feel unsafe, that the police department can work with that community to help fix that problem. Another area is training and education. Specifically, one of the areas the reports mention is the areas of implicit bias. And, you know, one of the things that we spent time talking about during this briefing is We had Dr. Bryant Marks from Morehouse College come and discuss implicit bias.
That means?
It means that those kind of hidden biases. So there's explicit bias, people who, you know, maybe belong to a particular organization, such as they're a part of a Nazi party. So those people who blatantly look for people that they have bias against. But we all carry different implicit biases.
How does the hidden bias aspect affect the police in particular?
You know, there's still research being done on that as to what effect it could have on police.
What would be an example?
Somebody may not get into the profession of law enforcement, for example, with a bias against African-Americans. But if you're assigned to an African-American, a traditionally African-American neighborhood, and every call you go to is involving African-Americans that are being violent or armed or selling drugs, over time, you start might start having a bias towards African-Americans because every interaction you have with those individuals may be something that never is criminal in behavior. So could it be possible? Absolutely. The way to combat that, the potential for implicit bias, is to have positive interactions. So when you go back and look at the community policing pillar, that plays a role in helping resolve some of the bias issues, too, that may be out there.
Because you're seeing people as broader than just suspects or
people
involved in criminal activity.
Yes.
You're seeing the community as in its fullness.
Sure. So we all carry down these biases. You ask our officers who work midnight shift about their perception of ISU students, and the first thing that might come to their mind is drunk, you know, or intoxicated, belligerent. We know a vast majority of our students aren't causing issues. There's a small percentage that cause some issues. And yes, alcohol is involved in most of those issues. But that's where those kind of biases, an example of some of that bias, might come in. And we all carry those with us. If you were to ask, and Dr. Marks actually questions young black males about police, and some of the comments he gets from them is racist and violent and things like that. So other people can carry biases even against the police themselves.
What were some of the recommendations that you took away from this meeting that you think will change or influence the way you are working here as the chief of police on campus?
You know, one of the areas that we talked about was officer wellness and safety. And, you know, these recent issues that have happened in Dallas and that have happened in Baton Rouge now only highlight some of the dangers that officers face. And, you know, the president came in and spoke specifically to law enforcement to thank us for our work that we do. And again, recognize the fact that this isn't just a law enforcement issue, that we as a society have failed in many areas and are now placing a lot of extra burdens on law enforcement to help solve some of society's issues when that really isn't our role. So, but he also recognized the families of those officers that have been lost. And certainly a large number of line of duty deaths happen because of gunfire. A lot of them happen because of traffic-related causes. Either they're getting struck by vehicles or they're dying because they weren't wearing seatbelts or because they were going too fast. So that was another area of focus. But one of the main areas that is most concerning that we're starting to see, even just I saw something in the news yesterday about it, is officer wellness in terms of emotional wellness. Officers carry along a lot of burden with them, the type of calls that they go to. Now, our officers may not see the same thing that police officers in Chicago see, but certainly they still carry a burden of what they see on a day-to-day basis. And if the community interaction with them are negative, they carry that with them. But there's a lot of other stressors, your personal life that comes into play here, and internal stressors within the department. And what we don't see that doesn't get a lot of attention is the number of officer suicides. That number can be as high as 300 a year, maybe even higher. There's not a lot of concrete research into how many officers take their own lives, but it's certainly quite a few more than officers that are killed in the line of duty. And looking at where does that come from? Are officers taking care of themselves emotionally too? So that was another big part of what we discussed there on that day, in addition to the implicit bias. The president himself came out to address us, and he wanted to reinforce what he said to the media, that a vast majority of law enforcement come in to work every day and do their job and all they want to do is go home to their families, and that all these incidents are tragedies, but that a vast majority of Americans still support law enforcement and that he supports law enforcement as well.
Do you think that the tragic deaths of the officers did somehow set back an awareness in this country that was taking place, that there are tensions between the police and the Black community, and things that the Black community has been saying for years, that they're singled out more frequently than whites are, say, for traffic stops, for drug searches and things like that? People were beginning to have an awareness of that, and then you have the officer shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost taken us away from what was the original discussion, which was, how can we build trust between the African-American, the minority communities, and police? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if we go back and look at some of these issues, and certainly there are statistics that are reinforcing what African-Americans have felt, and I'm not trying to discredit that, but there are also other statistics out there that don't quite make the media attention and aren't getting that same focus. And certainly,
what are those?
You know, there's over 385 million police citizen contacts in this country every year. 385 million. Out of those, 11 million, a little over 11 million result in arrests. And out of those contacts, 48,000 end up in officers being assaulted. So there was over 48,000 law enforcement assaults. And then, again, using the Washington Post statistics that had come out last year on their tracking, so by using the media's actual tracking, there were 900 officers involved shootings where a citizen was killed. So, again, out of 385 million contacts, 990 resulted in officer-involved shootings where the person was killed. And again, I don't want to minimize any of those particular numbers, because those are important numbers, and we would all would like if those numbers are zero. But the fact is, law enforcement are getting assaulted over 48,000 times a year. And when the media reports these incidents as the police are always shooting African Americans, it's going to make more people agitated towards police, assuming that police are unsafe to be around, that every contact you have with a law enforcement officer could result in a shooting. And while certainly that possibility is there, the likelihood of it happening is very minimal.
You hear these competing calls, Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that as kind of a troubling trend, that you either have to be for blue lives or black lives? Isn't there some way to say all of these lives matter?
There are people out there that are saying that all lives matter, and they all do. I think this really comes down to the fundamental issues. We are all human beings, and how would we want to be treated, and how are we treating each other? And making this a rhetorical thing where these people are important, but these people aren't, it really does not matter. The Blue Lives Matter, it shouldn't have its own movement. Yes, of course, police officers' lives matter. They matter just as much as that poor young black male that's standing on the street corner there. Every life matters, and certainly a vast majority of those of us in law enforcement recognize that we have all taken an oath to save and to sacrifice our lives as necessary for others. And it is a very honorable and noble cause that we have. And we're not trying to say that anybody's life is more important than the other. So I don't know that necessarily saying that Blue Lives Matter is an important thing for law enforcement. I think the Black Lives Matters movement is certainly a noble cause as well. But at a certain point, we have to still function as a country, and we have to get together and bring both sides of the table to work to improve the community, and less about pointing fingers at each other. And it's hard, because it feels very personal on both sides, and it shouldn't be that way. But it really starts with having those honest dialogues and communicating.
We've been talking with Aaron Woodruff, who is the chief of police of Illinois State University. He's just back from a meeting at the White House talking about a presidential commission report on police-community relations. Thank you so much for talking about all of these important matters.
Thank you.
I'm Judy Valente.